Exhibition number 23175, Reel 2.
Mr. Hastings, Reel 3.
At a, as far as I can remember, from in the region of that. And you'd get yourself cleaned up and do your kit up and everything, or start doing your kit up, and then you'd put on the pray for breakfast and go to the cookhouse.
The dining hall.
Did
you march to breakfast? March down?
Yes, you paraded and then you marched to breakfast. That's right. I remember you all lining up. That's right.
So what would you get for breakfast to eat?
Well, we'd get the usual breakfast, fried bacon, eggs and what have you, toast, bread and butter, tea. Yes.
And was this a cafeteria system or were you...
No, you lined up and you went in, just as you do today. And you give your plate, you had your plate with you, I forget now, and you put that on the plate, you went and sat down at the table, as you say. And when you all got sat down, all the officer would come round and all the officer, any complaints? If you had any complaints about your food, you told all the officer, like. And they would make the necessary inquiry into it.
So they did take that seriously?
Yes, they did take it seriously, yeah. Everything was disciplined in a way, like, you know.
And you had your knife, spoon and fork, which had been issued to you.
That's right, we had to keep them clean ourselves. We were responsible for cleaning them.
So when you left the dining hall after breakfast, was there a washing place for cleaning your utensils?
No, we cleaned them before we left, you say. There's not water laid down for them. We said clean all our utensils up there and then we left. Knife, fork and spoon we'd take with us. I think the place were, I forget now, the place were left behind, that's right.
And then did you make your own way back to the barrack room, or again were you marched back?
Yeah, no, you made your own way back. In the word we used to call them a lumps or something, they used to call that, like. And then you'd finish setting all your kit up and everything, ready for the barrack room inspection. And the bombardier, it was a bombardier that once my toast type was in the RA, not the corporals. And they would inspect you and make sure everything was right before they went on the 9 o'clock parade. Then you parade and then you did your rifle drill or what have you, or sometimes you'd go to the gymnasium and do PT. Get stripped off and be jumping over horses and that, and stands and all things like that.
Drill instructors, do you remember any of them?
The what?
Do you remember any of the drill instructors?
The drill instructors? Yeah, just the sergeants and the bombardiers, two stripers.
And were they all right?
Yes, they were all right. Sometimes you get one a bit over strict and sometimes you get one, well, you know, come see, come sad business, and very slightly, but nothing all there, you know. Some are keener than the others, and they're more disciplined than the others. And some are easy going, which is human tolerance, that is it.
And presumably they would demonstrate a given move.
Yeah, that's right, yes.
And was this all done to numbers?
The numbers, yes. We start numbers of the rifle drill. Up, one, two, three. You'd all shout out together, you see. And when you march off a slow march, one, right foot, left foot, like that. So you all worked uniformly together. I mean, you've seen them on the telly, the guards and that, though, and they're going, are we to learn all that? All starting to get over to one. The British Army's well known for that.
How did you take to the shouting and the language?
I just shouted their orders, me.
You had no problem with that?
No.
I'm thinking, you know, the rather severe language they use, you know, the bad language they would use. Were you used to that? Did you have that approach?
Occasionally they come up a bit now and then, but we just took it our stride, that. That wasn't just a bit now and then. Very rare that happened, like, oh, that was kept at bay, like. Like you've seen it on in Dad's Arm, things like that. You stupid boy, and things like that. There's nothing like that in a way, but it varied on that at time, not to that extent, like, you know.
So you do drill or PT, and was there a morning break?
There's a morning break, yes.
What? How long would that be?
Oh, that'd be, I can't remember, probably about quarter of an hour. Damage quite well, that way.
And what were you able to do during that break time?
Well, you'd stand about, like, and have a talk, and sometimes you'd have a cuppa. I just, something like that, but no. Anyway, you had a break, then you're back into harness again.
What would happen for the second part of the morning?
Well, you just carry on and do the rest of your doings, like, you know. As you did more and more as you progressed, like. So eventually, that's why 6 weeks training before you were allowed out. And when you were allowed out, when you went to the guard room, you had to report the guard room, and the sergeant in the guard inspected you to make sure you're properly dressed. So you went out on the streets.
What time would lunchtime be?
It was...
dinner time?
We'd be 12 o'clock at half past 12.
So that was your major meal of the day, wasn't it?
Very slightly, yes. Major meal of the day, yeah. Lunch, yeah.
What kind of food did they give you then?
Well, they give them what we generally get as our English way of day. It's like potatoes, veg, meat. We'd have a sweet. It was well-known army prawns. That was a well-known dish, that prawns and all that, like. So I custard all out like that, and pastries with it, and things like that. Just more or less when you got it home. It was a very good, varied diet. You didn't get a great deal, you got enough to keep you going.
What would you do in the afternoon after the dinner?
Ah, well, sometimes you'd go to on gun drill, running up and down with 18 pound of gun shells and all that, up and down the steep, sloping that, or pushing the gun round, manning the gun, the dial sight and things like that. Other times you might be on a gymnasium, you might be on the fire at the minute. The indoor firing range, fine toward.
So you mentioned your schooling.
School.
You mentioned schooling.
Well, so go to school to learn about the regiment and other things and write essays and all that. Like, it was like going back to school, but a bit more advanced than when I went to school. I think it kept us in. It all these things, you touched on everything. It was a combination of ideas. It all helped you in your training, you say, whatever. You used to learn things at school which you thought weren't much good for you. Later on, you found out, oh, I remember nothing about that. Not at school. You know.
Did you have a certificate to pass at some stage?
Yes, I think we did get a school certificate. I know I never got one. I think we did. Because when you went to your service unit, that stood you in good stead for a bit for promotion, what have you. You were all gauged. I know I was, my outstanding achievement was map reading. And I got a job as a dispatch rider. One of my manoeuvres.
We'll come to that then. Hmm. You mentioned that the history of the regiment, that was an important part of the training.
Yes.
And was that to instill pride in your regiment?
Yes, it touched everything. Everything come up gradually, you say, so you're even. You didn't concentrate on one subject and then leave the others behind. It all come together bit by bit. I think it was a good organisation at the time, like.
At the end of the afternoon, what happened to you then when your various parades and your schooling
and about 4 o'clock or so, you'd finish your parades, 4 o'clock at half past four, and then you were dismissed, like, and you're free to pursue your own activities. In the, you weren't allowed out, like, in that six weeks training. You used to go and spend your time in the canteen playing billiards them days, or snooker, or table tennis, things like that were all set up for you. For recreation and all that. You could stop in your barrack room and read books out the library and that. It was a well organised thing now in them days.
Was there a lot of cleaning to be done at night?
Cleaning?
Cleaning uniforms, cleaning books?
Well, there was at times, like, if you're on guard, you had to get ready for guard and all that. Because you had always guard every night, like, you had to take your turn, like, probably once every 10 days or once every fortnight. It varied, you see.
And the standard of turnout was high, was it?
It was very high. You used to, what you could call, if you got the stick. What I meant by the stick is, the man who was dressed the best in the line, he didn't do any guards. He just went and got the cocos for their own meals and that. And the others did their guards, you see. It was like a bit of a competition. You did something well, you've got, well, I thought about it, you've got made some achievement. So you kept you on your toes, you always had something to work for. I think it was good, that.
Was the, was the rivalry between the squads, is that what you called them? Yeah.
Yes, there'd be a bit of rivalry amongst the squads. They had football teams and things like that, you know.
And the
rivalry between how well you were doing your marching on parade and everything like that. So-and-so's done very well, you haven't done so well, and they've done quite achievement and all that, and that kept you on your toes, so to speak.
How many would be on guard at the given time?
About six altogether, I think. Four to six. One got the stick, like, he was the best turned out, and he just went for the, as I said, like.
How what was guard drill? How did you change the guards?
Well, we changed the guard, like you've seen on the telly. You march up, there's a sentry on duty's there. He comes to attention. The one who goes works under their NCO, like, the sergeant of the guard, and halt, left turn, lines him up with other man. And the other stand at ease, attention and all that, and then step forward, and then the man comes off duty, he's marched to the guard room. It's all done in a nice, orderly, military-like way. You just can't say, oh, no, okay, you're on guard now. That'd be done in that way.
The inspection of the guard, who carried that out?
The orderly officer.
What was he looking for, particularly?
Well, he would sometimes he'd find fault with you, sometimes minor faults. I suppose that was to keep you on your toes, but on the whole, if anything was wrong, he'd tell you about it, like, you know, not in a nice way, like. But that was all to added to your makeup of being on your toes, part of your training. You weren't expected to be a good soldier straight away. You worked gradually toward, through trial and error.
He examined you front and back?
Front and back, yes.
Did you have to show him the soles of your boots and the sprigs?
Polished? Oh, no,
didn't go as far as that?
Just looked at your boots and everything, all your uniform, how well was cleaned and... You were clean shaven and so forth, your buttons were clean and all that, and your uniform fitted you right, was properly arranged right and all that, and your rifle steady and all that, like, things like that.
How long did the guard last?
It lasted 24 hours. Sometimes it lasted 12 hours. Sometimes 24 on main guards, and this nightly guard's 12 hours. Going on at evening, come off in the morning. It varies, you see.
How much of that time did you spend on duty? So many hours on?
You spent 2 hours on duty and four off. Because I remember, I've still got it with us now, if I've got to go out early in the morning, when I was in the army, I used to wake up 10 minutes before I was going to go on guard, and when the sentry would come in, like, I said, what time? He said, I'm just going to wake you up. It's 10 to. All right, though. And stuck with us, that trainer. It's been good.
And on night duty, on night guard, could you be inspected at any point during the night? Would someone come and see what you're up to, what you're doing?
Well,
I'm thinking of orderly officer making an appearance during the night.
They used to see you on, and sometimes they'd come around, but not very rare that. Very rare that happened, like. The orderly officer do his job, like, and see you on. And that was that. Very rare to come back later on. Odd times they did over some of the leg, you know.
What were you guarding?
Well, we're guarding the barracks in general, or the car park, the gun park, numerous things. Ammunition dump. The guards all over, the main entrance and all that.
If you'd been on through the whole night, were you excused any duties the following day?
Oh, no, you just went on as usual. You come off guard, and because you had 2 hours on and 4 hours off, you see, and you just carry on your duties. When if it was a 12-hour guard, it was 24. When you come off at tea time, when the guard was mounted, 6 o'clock at night, after tea.
Well, when you finished your basic drill periods, at what point in your training were you introduced to the guns?
Well, not straight away. First of all, they got you into discipline as regards marching, so you could carry yourself as a soldier should be, which to me is common sense. And then you started on off knowing about the guns and the history of the artillery. That's why they call them bombardiers there instead of corporals. And a bombardier years ago was like a gun, like a big mortar. And when they first got the artillery guns, and that's got the name, the junior NCOs are called bombardiers. In keeping with that. In the infantry, you're just called corporal, you see.
What guns were you using, or would be using?
What?
What guns were they?
We had 18 pounds and 4.5 howitzers. And they were all drawn that way.
Were they still First World War type guns?
They were used in the First World War, and they use now on ceremonial parades in the Royal Horse Artillery when you see them. The king or queen's birthday, they use them there now without them fancy uniforms on. They're the same limbers as we had years ago when they go line them up. But they've got them guns of modern now, like the long toms and that, and 3.7 anti-aircraft guns, Gophers guns, the numerous guns now.
When you were introduced to the guns, what kind of drills were you having to do?
Well, you were learned, a Lewis gun, them days, you had to be able to strip it down and put together blindfolded at times. You'd all gather around on the table, and that helped you to get familiar with the gun, because it had to be stripped down sometimes in action, you see, so you had to know how to do it. You used to do it blindfolded, in case it was dark at night. It was a thorough good training you got, like you had to get accustomed to your weapons, your tools of your trade, so to speak, weren't they?
And from that gun, where did you move to? What was the next weapon? Was it the artillery gun?
From there, you went in, when you went to your service unit, that's when you got your gun.
I will come to that. Yeah, we'll come to that. I thought this in the initial training.
Initial training, you just got your gun drill, 18 pounders away, and run down the street with dummy shells in the holder. Like, it was hard work, but you had to get accustomed to it, because that what you had to actually do in action.
How long did the initial training last?
6 months, I believe. Yeah, it'd be six months.
So quite a long spell, 6 months.
I think it was 6 months or 3 months. I just forget now. It's that long ago.
You mentioned that you
maybe 3 months.
You mentioned that you were taught 18-pounder drill. What kind of what were they teaching you?
They're teaching that unlimber the gun. Turn it round and put onto a platform so you could turn it round easy instead of being in the mud and that on the floor. Things like that. Then there's a dial sight, and then you had to, the GPO, the gun position officer, he'd be standing the back of the guns, and he'd have an observation post out, would be on radio or field telephone, the phone, while shells were dropping. And they'd turn to him, then he would say, somebody, right hand, you all put your right hand up on your dial sight. He looked down the four guns, you had your right hand up, so he turned that part of the dial sight, so he all went on the same way as he wanted, on the left hand, whatever. And you put so many degrees on, and the elevation, you put that on, then you loaded the gun and you're at the fire.
How many made up a gun crew?
Let's see now, about five or six of us, I can remember.
And each man would have a different task on the gun.
Yes. You had people who carried them, at least six altogether, because you'd have people stand at the back to bring ammunition in, you see, and load it in, and they step back, and others were there to fire it, others were there to lay the gun, so they move the gun round that way and this way, like, on that platform you're locking onto, so it turned round easy.
Was it a good gun?
Oh, yes, 18 pound was a good gun, the 4.5, I would say, yes. Of course, they're outmanned now by the other guns now, the 25-pounder. That's quite a popular gun, the last one. It's still being used today, I understand.
At the end of the initial training period, did you have a passing-out parade?
Oh, yes. The end of the training, we had a passing-out parade, yes. We'd all get dressed up in your finery and that, and people would get achievement awards over the past the training, like first, second and third and all that business, achievements. Well, that'd give you something to work for, didn't it, when you were in your training? And that made him more a polished professional soldier. And there was a big day of that, right? Because sometimes your family was invited down, if you lived nearby, and they all sat down and watched you get pass out parade. You've seen it on the telly time time again, haven't you? I don't think that'll ever go. They'll keep that up.
So you finish your training now, and you're ready to move to a unit. Which unit did you move to then?
I went to the 19th Field Brigade at Camp Borden. I did, and that's when my first introduction to horses. We were introduced to horses and the crowds for the London streets for some morning parades, waving, rattling tins and all that. But then we had to learn how to look after the horses, how to feed them, how to look after the harness and all that, and all the traces when they put them under their limbers. If they got their leg over, as they call it, you had to jump off your limber, the gunners, two gunners on each limber, and run alongside the horse, like, and pull a quick race strap up, pick the ends up, so brought, because if the long traces went on the ground slack, the horse could go around or turn and round, and get on the wrong side of it, you see. We had to pull that up, fasten up again, and jump back on the limber again. We had to be pretty fit. So you see, you want to be pretty fit with the gymnasium when you were in the depot training to prepare you for all that. It's to go to the riding school and learn how to ride a horse correctly.
And how was that done?
Well, you just, you walk round the horse first, out of mount and dismount, the way of doing that. You face the horse, and on the saddle like that. What's going on? You already prepared a mount, and you just, well, that, you swung yourself up, and the other leg went over into the stirrup. And when you had to gauge the length of your stirrup iron, the leather strap. I know I went camping once a few years ago, and we just had to go horse riding, just to walk around, just, you know, recreation, camping. This is about 20 years ago or so. And they seen me do that, they put the thing right. The DJ took that horse off me and gave me another one, was a bit on the rough side, like. I said, oh, it was about 30 years since I drove a horse. Since I rode a horse, like. So it was good training. I just remember that.
And the horse had to be seen to before yourselves?
That definitely, yes. In fact, the horses were like the men when the sergeant used to take them out. Some you had to lead out for the water, and some of them just followed themselves. They knew what to do. They'd have a drink at the trough. They waited at the sergeant at the end there. And some of the sergeant said, yes, back again. They just turned on themselves. Some you had to march them back in. They knew the game. They go back to the stall where they live. They're very intelligent horses. In fact, one occasion, I had my two favourite horses. We all have our favourites. And every Friday payday, I used to buy a bar of chocolate for tuppence them days. That was in their 30s. And as soon as I went in that stable door after dinner, these two horses were shouting at me. They knew it was me coming in on a Friday to give them a bar of chocolate apiece. Yeah. Although, I like the horses.
What breed were they?
Well, they had the heavy duty ones for pulling the guns, and they had the light ones for what they call the battery stuff. When you're laying telephone wire, you had to run the horse full gap with a reel of wire out for the telephone to the OP. As I've just mentioned about the OP, you see, observation post, when they're firing the guns, it's connected up to the gun position officer, so he knows how to lay the gun, where the shells are dropping, to alter the range and that, the angle and what have you.
What duties did you, or what activities did you have to perform when you were grooming your horse? How was that done?
Oh, that was done, we were very strict on that. We had a curry comb, you had to groom the horse, and when you had to do its tail, yeah, the stable doors opened halfway, the reason for that. You back the horse onto that, pull its tail over the board. The reason you kept the top door open, the bottom door's closed. When you were doing the horse's tail, he might kick you. So he couldn't kick you, say, things like that.
You were outside the bottom half of the door.
Exactly, yes. All them things, yeah. You learnt what you call roughex on a morning in the winter time. Roughex, you got your horses out about 7:30. You got three horses. You rode the centre one, and the one on either side, and you go for a ride round the woods in the vicinity, then come back. And in the summertime, the train season, you call it a dress X. You put a saddle on them days for dress X and all the trimmings with it, you see, when they're pulling the guns and that. But for rough X, during the winter months, you just had a blanket on.
Did you have to learn to ride it without using your hands?
Not to my knowledge.
Just the knees, and you didn't have anything of that nature. Mm.
You had to learn how to jump over things. That would have been different. You had to lean forward and come back as it went over anything off like that, you know. Had some fun falling off the thing like that. First time I went out, I come off ever so many times. I had bits of gauze and me blitz on me and all sorts. The sergeant was waiting for me to come in. He says, I've understood you've had a rough time. He said, you'll make a good rider later on, you will. And I did fairly good at it later on, like, yeah. He was right.
What about cleaning the stables? Was that part of your task?
That was our time, yes. We had what he called a stable man. His job was to keep the horses clean, the bedding and everything like that. The other men helped him to take the bedding out. We laid the bedding down, the straw and that, from the later on. And the stable man had the duty of making all the horses' feeds up. Some horses might be on a different feed, medical reasons. And to make sure all the horses' feeds are made up. Any special ones had to go to that particular horse. Yeah, things like that, yeah. Oh, you learned quite a bit. It was very interesting.
Now, this is a... Where did you say this training was? What was the name of the camp?
Camp Borden.
And how big a camp was that?
It was a fairly big camp. Louis Bear Barracks, they called it. There was the Cameronians, they had different regiments, infantry regiments and all that. We were in the artillery, like. I was in Louis Bear Barracks.
Did the barracks differ from the ones you'd left in any way? Were they different type, different style?
Well, where the stables there and all that, like, about the same style, like, you know.
The same number of men to a room, and...
Yeah, all that was about the same, yes. Mm.